Welcome back to another episode of Winning Through Culture. I am excited today to be here with Debbie Milhouse. Debbie is CEO of CEO Inc. She is also the CEO of Go Healthcare Staffing and is the CEO and founder of Accenture, all based in Charlotte, North Carolina. Some of these companies have been recognized as Inc. 5000 fastest growing companies. Most recently, the Go Healthcare Staffing Company. She's been a part of the Charlotte Best Places to Work for a number of years. One of the most influential business leaders in the Carolinas. Top 50 most influential business leader hall of fame. One of the top entrepreneurs in the Charlotte area. And also spends a great deal of time leading a very active and vibrant Bible study. So Debbie, welcome to Winning Through Culture.
Thanks, Tim. I'm glad to be here.
Well, it's good to be with you. It's been too long since I've seen you. And the purpose of this podcast is really to help entrepreneurs, business owners kind of navigate how do you be intentional about creating a successful culture. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you are in the staffing business and have been now for a number of years. So you see things both as an employer, mm-hmm. a highly competitive field, and as a person that's trying to find employees for companies that are growing. And I know your companies have been growing very rapidly as well. So you've got the distinct perspective of having to provide a culture that gets and keeps great people and also finds great people for other companies. So love to lean into that with you today and see where our conversation goes.
So, sure, that'd be great.
Yeah. So I'm curious when you think about, again, you kind of got both sides of your business, Debbie, but when you think about I'll start with you being an employer. I mean, how have you had to change or modify the way you go about finding people to be a part of your respective companies to work with you?
Well, because we are in the staffing industry, we have one of the benefits of seeing all the great candidates first. So we get to pick the best.
That's true.
So, I mean, we are recruiters. We also use recruiters to help staff in our organization because we understand the benefit of working with a recruiting firm that understands the space and can identify the talent that is needed. Now, we don't need it all the time, but we have done it on a couple of occasions. I'm testing it out to see if they can cut the mustard.
Well, I think it sounds like you might be able to leverage some of your own capabilities. And I know you look for employees in all kinds of different fields. So I know that can be challenging to find people with certain skill sets or certain expertise in a particular field.
Right.
Yeah. So curious then, as you look at now as a company that's finding employees for other companies, it's mm-hmm. not your primary business. I mean, how have you seen people have to modify how they've gone about that over the last couple of years?
Well, I think one of the biggest modifications that companies have had to make is they have to engage wholeheartedly with the prospective candidates on the front end, and they have to move much quicker.
Interesting. So when you say engage wholeheartedly, elaborate on that if you would, Debbie. I think I picture what you mean there.
Yeah, I know that there are a lot of companies out there like Amazon that are going to apps and different things like that to be able to bring talent in. I'm just not sure how well that's going to be received without the personal touch associated with recruiting. Companies need to have someone who's sitting in a role that can either help them hear the truth and ask the right questions. But they have to understand that right now we're in a candidate short marketplace. Mm-hmm. So they have lots of different options. If you're not as engaged with your candidates as the next guy is, you could likely lose them. And you probably will lose them. And they'll ghost you. They'll take a counteroffer. You have to qualify the candidate well, but then you have to market your company to that candidate.
So you've really got to get them interested in your culture right out of the gates, make a relatively quick decision as to whether they're a good fit for yours, and then really build that personal relationship even before they've started to make you the top choice in their more than one option pool of opportunity.
Well, and make sure they're the right fit for your culture as well.
Yeah.
One of the great questions that I think is important to ask a candidate is, what are you looking for in an employer? If I'm interviewing you for a role, what are you interviewing me for? Mm-hmm. Because if your candidate comes back and tells you five things and you're only one of those five things, it's a no deal.
Yeah. Yeah. No need to proceed. We're trying.
Right. And it's the same thing with you. If they're just one of the five things that you're looking for, you're not going to move forward either. So then make sure that you handle it professionally, because those people talk. And because candidates are so hard to find, the candidate that you're interviewing with may not be the candidate that you end up with, but they might know the one.
Yep. Yeah.
That you'll end up with. So you have to be able to be engaging enough that they would even refer somebody to you.
If it's a no, you can get to a no where they still feel good about their encounter with your organization.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. But a lot of companies don't think that. Candidates apply online to a black hole. They never hear from anybody. When they do, the person doesn't know what they applied for. They can't give them any information. They ask irrelevant questions. They're not even excited about the job that they're doing. So how positive is that going to be for somebody coming on board? Ooh, you hate where you work. Ooh, I'm so excited about that.
I don't think I'll come work there either.
Yeah. Let's go to lunch.
Yeah. What, you know.
That's right. Well,
I think you're speaking, I guess, to a certain extent, to being very relational right out of the gates versus transactional.
Yeah. And there are a lot of companies out there that put young professionals in their HR arena. And I'm not knocking the young people, but sometimes they have not had the training to be able to ask in-depth, intelligent questions. They're listening for what they want to hear, or they're going out to LinkedIn and they're doing the thing that all the rookie recruiters do out there. Hey, I got a job. You got a minute. Can you type? Can you do general ledger accounting? Can you run SQL? And the person's like, yeah. That's not an engagement.
No. I guess I'm also hearing you speak to the fact that, again, as an employer, whomever is charged with helping you find and bring people on have been equipped to do the job.
Right.
So we'll come back to that, because I think that's the point. The issue of not enough candidates for too many jobs has come up a lot in the last couple of years. What do you see driving that dynamic? There's all kinds of interesting opinions about that, but what do you see driving that dynamic?
Well, I mean, there was a candidate shortage before COVID hit.
Okay.
And then COVID hit and not all of them, but a lot of the women left the marketplace because they had to stay home with the kids because the schools were closed. Well, in that transition, a lot of those women decided that they, like, it was cheaper to stay home than to go back. Or they found out that their kids were not engaged in school, or the schools weren't coming back in a way that their kids were engageable. So, I mean, there are a lot of women who left the marketplace that still have not come back.
Hmm.
They figured out that paying all the high prices are a challenge. And then you have the older generation that is aging out, and they're like, well, I don't want to mess with this anymore. And then you've got other people who are still COVID afraid to go out in the marketplace and they want to work from home, or they've been allowed to work from home. Well, I mean, they have been allowed to be under the impression that they work from home. You know, because if you can't quantify it and you can't measure it, be full aware that some of your work from home workers are doing a side hustle and your company might be it.
Yeah, there's a lot in what you just said there. I guess maybe the starting point is, do you see this trend of a lack of workers for the opportunities continuing? Do you think an economics opened that up a little bit? Or is that, as you said, something that started pre-COVID and may just be a demographic trend?
Well, I think that where you can use technology to fill that gap, you should.
Mm-hmm.
I think companies have to be much more intentional about building a pipeline for their employees you know, I have several clients that are in the labor industry. So they work in retail or they work in some of those other areas that are even harder to find candidates for. And it's like, you can't just sit around and hope. Hope is not a strategy. You've got to build a pipeline. You've got to get with companies or colleges, or you have to bond with other companies that are similar to yours. Find a group of employees that you think you can develop and bring up. There's a very successful group in Charlotte, on the east side of Charlotte. They built a community around a church community and several construction companies. And they've been training those kids for the last 5 years, and they are taking Charlotte by storm with some of their solutions because they knew they had to build a better mousetrap to bring the people in. Looking outside the box, you know, you're in the sales industry. You guys do a lot of recruiting, and you know the dynamics of what makes a successful financial services professional. But part of the reason you've been successful is you think outside the box. Hey, I'm going to take this athlete. I'm going to put some great brand marketing around him. I'm going to help him build his business because he's got the tools and we can help him be great at that and show him how to thrive in your business. There are companies that are going to have to do that as well.
Yeah, so you just can't wait around passively and
show up. Yeah, if your company is okay not growing or staying the same or losing your talent, then go ahead, stick with your same strategy. I have one company that came through. They were losing talent like crazy. It was in the manufacturing sector and it was on all levels. They went through and leveled up their entire organization by 20%.
Just to deal with attrition.
And the people signed agreements to stay a length of time. They're thrilled. They're not going anywhere. They're not having to move. They're not having to relocate. And they feel like they've been compensated and heard. But it has helped that company flourish because they didn't have to go through any of the change that is associated with bringing candidates in or having candidates leave.
So they were overstaffing, in essence, Debbie, if I heard you right.
No. They paid their employees that stayed 20% more.
Gotcha. All right. So let's maybe, if we could, talk a little bit about what you're seeing working, cultural or otherwise, in a business that's helping both attract and keep talent. What are some of the aspects of, again, on the attraction side, obviously the engagement, making quick decisions, but what are some of the things you see successful companies doing on the attraction side to get people, and then we'll come back to keeping them?
I think one of the things that has helped some companies, it doesn't help all companies, but if you have flexibility for people to work from home at least part of the time, I think that is an attraction. Right now, companies are throwing sick money at people. I don't expect that that's going to continue, and nor do I think that's a healthy strategy from a candidate perspective or from an employer perspective. But sometimes, you know, it's a lot easier to throw $25,000 at somebody to get them to stay until you decide what you're going to do with them.
Yeah.
Because that's really what happens. We had a company that we were working with. It wasn't our candidate, but they extended an offer to the candidate. The candidate took a counter offer of $45,000, and this is mid-level, not senior level. Mm-hmm. And when they had that situation happen, then the company called me and said, hey, we need your company to help us find the people that we need because we're just losing in this battle. And I just said, look, you know, the candidate took the money, but long term, you can't throw $45,000 on one person in one position at that level when there's multiples and that not come back to bite you. It will. When the market tanks and things change, the company's going to remember that. And when they look across the board at different departments and are looking for who they're going to lay off or downsize, it's not going to be the cheapest people.
Well, I know in your
life, the work is distributed across the board.
Well, that brings up an interesting point, Debbie. I mean, in your line of work, you're on the early stages of seeing what's happening. I mean, what are you seeing?
Well, I mean, you know, I have people who were asking me about the tech sector jobs, you know, because tech has been plummeted in the financial markets. And you have companies like Twitter that cuts 50% of their employees and seems to be running just fine.
Yeah.
Well, your tech companies are going to lay off because they're high growth, cheap money people. If interest rates go higher, they'll continue to slow it down and slow it down big. And the challenge that you're going to find is those companies are going to back up and say, hey, we're doing just fine with less people. In fact, we have less headaches with less people. Maybe we'll just take better care of the people we need.
So do you see that as a trend in 2023?
I do see that with some companies and some industries. Okay.
All right. Well, back to as you're looking for candidates for companies, are there a couple things that stand out as the type of company that's a lot easier to place a candidate in than not?
Well, I think as a company, you have to look at the impression that you give the candidate all the way through. Mm-hmm. Are they treated like part of the team? Are they greeted? Do you know something about them? Do you know about what is going to be important to them in bringing them on board? It's that question I asked you before. If they tell you they want those five things, does that get communicated to the next person who's handling the interview? Does that get communicated to the person who's doing the closing or the selling of your organization to that candidate? And then can you turn an offer around that's competitive pretty quickly? And then do you do any follow-up at all with the candidate after they accept the offer? Are you looking for those buying signs all the way through? And I think probably one of the hardest things for people to learn, Tim, is to listen for the truth, not what they want to hear.
And how does one go about that, Debbie?
It helps if you keep your mouth shut. You have to remember that you're buying, so you have to qualify them and you have to listen for the truth. And are you getting little yeses and big yeses?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it's sales, right?
Yep. Well, you're trying to position your company as the most favorable place to choose among them.
If you're a company that's a little bit more mature demographically and you're trying to bring some younger people in through the ranks, you're probably going to have to bring them in groups because they're not going to feel super comfortable if you've got one 25-year-old and everybody else is 40. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to figure out how to develop that culture. And you may have to have some of those people who are going to do a couple of those other things. Hey, you know, we're all going to go for drinks at this pub, or we're going to try top golf, or we're going to have some kind of activities to build a culture where the younger people can meet other people because they want community. I mean, older people want community too, but they've kind of developed it around their kids and their family and their church and some of those things. If you want to bring some of those up and comers in, you're going to have to think through that strategy if you're going to do it at a significant level.
The strategy of creating community in essence in the workplace.
Right.
Yeah, that's a theme that comes up a lot. I'm curious, what are some of the other aspects of strong cultures you see companies provide that are attractive to today's workforce?
Well, I think the kids today want to know that they have a voice and that they're heard. I don't think they're naive enough to believe that they're going to run 100% of your culture and that you're going to come to them for every decision. But I think they want to be heard and want to know that their thoughts are valuable and important. And they do have good ideas. So incorporate some of those and give some of that credit back and forth so that they feel like they have some responsibility in growing the culture as well. But yeah, I think accountability is really important. And I just think we have to have fun. Like if they come into your office and nobody laughs and nobody has fun, I don't want to work there. I mean, now you look a lot in my culture. So I get people all the time who are like, oh, you laugh all the time. Well, we have a good time and we don't take ourselves too seriously. And okay, so we're making sales calls. Let's have a little fun with that one.
Yeah. So I heard you say a few things, community, my word transparency, but really a listening ear that gives people a voice that is then incorporated into what the culture of the organization is, not just heard and say, oh, thanks very much. You don't know what you're talking about. We got this. So literally listening and acting on some of what you hear, obviously not.
And letting them act on some of it as well.
Yeah.
There's nothing more empowering than having somebody come up with an idea and then them allowing you to carry out some of those pieces of that idea. It makes you feel a strong sense of ownership with the success with that program. If you put a referral program in place, make sure that that referral bonus is tied to the success of the person who comes into your organization so that the person who refers somebody in feels some ownership to make sure that that person gets ingrained in the culture.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Spend some money to do pizza or take people to lunch. I mean, you know, I have one client who had a really hard time with getting people to accept an offer without going with a counter offer. And he was just asking me to consult with him on some ideas because he didn't want to hire us to actually do the hiring for him because of the volume. And I said, well, I mean, have you ever thought about maybe doing something really special for the man and his family who's going to come work for you?
Yeah.
Take him out on your boat. Let the husband take the wife out to dinner. Figure out, you know, if there's a move in place, figure out how you can connect them with some of the other people in the community so they feel like they're walking into a community. Mm-hmm. As opposed to trying to maneuver a brand new space all on their own with all of those changes.
Yeah, a lot of change. And then obviously add fun to the equation. So I want to go back to the work from home thing because that obviously is a topic that comes up a lot these days.
I bet.
And perhaps since COVID, maybe this will just be the new normal where there's a hybrid work environment. Mm-hmm. Seems like more companies, the bigger companies, are forcing everybody back in 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because their employees are cheating on them.
Yeah, the company's big enough that it's hard to catch that.
Right.
For, I guess, a smaller company under 100 employees, I mean, what do you see this work from home trend turning into? And is it really something that an employer has to embrace in some way, shape, or form to be competitive?
Well, I think it depends on the employees. If you have employees that you can really measure how they work so that there is that accountability, then I think if they want to work from home a couple days a week, go ahead and let them.
Yeah.
But if it is a rookie who doesn't know their job and you're expecting them to become an adult overnight, they're not an adult any other time in their life, why would they come in and be able to do that? They need that accountability and mentorship. Now, nobody wants to do it because it's a lot easier to work for 3 hours and then play for five.
You hit on something there about the mentorship piece. I mean, that's, I think, the battle that employers are fighting with a hybrid environment is how do you build a culture? Mm-hmm. And for people that are earlier in their professional career journey, how do you help them get the mentoring they might not even know they'll benefit from? But I think for those of us that have had the benefit of mentoring, and that's a previous podcast episode, it's beneficial. So what do you see as the balance there for an employer to kind of strike?
Well, I mean, I think you have to set the expectation of what it is that you're expecting. You know, it's easier in our organization because we're a sales organization. Mm-hmm. So I know the activities that a person is going to have to hit, and it's very measurable for us. Like we record their calls, we can quality check them, we have meetings in the morning, we have meetings in the afternoon. So there are different deltas that people have to hit. I think that if you don't have those things, I think it'd be very, very difficult. Like, I mean, if it's just a regular employee that doesn't have those quantifiable things that you can measure and see, I think that, I mean, and there's all kinds of technology out there so that you can spy, but is that the kind of culture you want to create either?
Probably not.
You know, you do have a responsibility to everyone in your company to hold people accountable. So taking that positive approach on the front end and not letting them go too long without that accountability, I think is really a big deal. I mean, it's got to hit from day one, if not before. You know, if they don't do it, Tim, you have to be able to pull the trigger pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, there's an old adage of you teach what you tolerate. But the thing that's interesting about, there's also an adage of hire slow, fire fast. But what I heard you say earlier is you can't really hire slow anymore. You got to kind of hire fast, but you also have to make a decision relatively quickly if it was a misfire.
Right.
It wasn't a fit. So really what I'm hearing you say, Debbie, is a work from home environment, the more measurable the role.
And the better it is.
Yeah, without spying on people, the better it is to be able to say, hey, you know what, they're getting their work done, even though they're not.
Yeah, but I mean, like with our organization, like if I expect you to make 40 calls, I can look on a call dialer and see that you did.
Yeah.
I can see how long your calls were. I can pull a couple calls and double check as your manager. We should be talking about those calls from day one. Hey, you said this, try this. Because again, you're trying to help people be successful.
Yep.
But if you've got somebody who doesn't lead well, and then you're giving them a whole crew at home.
Yeah. Well, let's go to, as you look at candidates, again, what are some of the predicators of success or predicators of future success you look for, Debbie?
Well, so it's different in different areas. I always want to see what they've done in the past. Mm-hmm. And even if they're young, I want to see how they did stuff in the past. So if I'm hiring a new grad whose parents done everything for them and also wants to negotiate their offer for them, like that's a no deal for me. So we are adults. You want to qualify them, but I think what's more important for me is attitude. Like in our business, it's a tough business. So I want people who are sunny side up. They can think on their feet. They can have a good sense of discernment. They can listen and not just talk all the time. I mean, it's your typical sales venue. But I also like, if you're a salesperson, you can't tell me your numbers, then I think you're probably full of poo.
What I'm hearing you say is know what the role calls for. And know what the skills are that are going to be successful. It's interesting. I didn't hear you say anything necessarily technical in nature, although if it's a technical role, I guess.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to hire somebody who's not computer literate because, yeah. I mean, like everything we do has technology built to it. Mm-hmm. And so if they're still carrying around 5 notebooks and 10 pens, they might be great for some industry, but they're probably not going to be good in ours.
Yeah. Well, everything's gone digital.
Yeah. And we do some assessment work as well. If I have a client who needs to have somebody who can type, we're going to give them a typing assessment because if somebody types 25 words a minute, the quantity and quality of the work that they could do is going to be different than somebody who can do 60. Mm-hmm. Or 90 or 128. So those are things to kind of factor in as well. It's easier to do when you're a smaller company than if you have to mass produce people.
Yeah. Well, I hear you say that there are obviously some businesses that have more difficult roles to fill, either because of the type of work or the hours of the work or the wage base of the work.
Yeah. How compensation is structured.
Yep. Yep. So as you think about, you're talking to a smaller employer under 100 employees, what advice do you have for them as they look at 2023 going into a new year on how to be a competitive employer? I know you talked about a lot of things, but is there any kind of final advice or counsel you would give them?
Well, if they're under 100 employees, probably my first suggestion is outsource your recruiting and just be really good at what you do.
Yep.
Because to have to do both of those things at once is going to be hard.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you've just got one or two positions to fill. But if you're really getting ready to grow, it's probably better to outsource your recruiting to somebody that you trust and somebody who cares about your company
mm-hmm.
with a heart. But if you decide that you're going to do it in-house, make sure that the people who are handling the process for you in-house are really good about translating to those candidates how great your company is to work for. And they're really good at qualifying the candidates that are going to come and work for your organization. And then how are you going to onboard them and make their first 3 months with you a great experience?
Yeah.
Because they've got to show up and do the work. You're qualifying them and you're hoping that that's what, you know, what you thought showed up actually comes to work on Monday. And then they're hoping that you show up in that same way. And make sure that you keep that personal element in there.
Yeah, keep the communication.
I mean, people matter. People are starving for significance and community. They want to be seen. They want to be heard. They want to do some meaningful work.
Well, I think that's a really important theme, Debbie, as we talk about all these different things, is the recognition that it's not just about a paycheck, but it's about some sense of significance, some sense of community, to your point earlier, and certainly some sense of being appreciated, heard, and understood.
I also think that a lot of people have been challenged with the whole cancel culture thing. And they're like, well, you know, we can't really tell them what we think because they're just going to cancel them out. That's not what I have seen with any of the generations. What I see is people want to know that they work for somebody who has the integrity to listen and be open-minded, but also have the integrity to tell the truth.
Yeah. Well, I think that gets back to that transparency from earlier, which is also, I think, something people are craving is when you talk about the truth, what is the truth?
It's yeah, they want mentors who will say, well, now, wait a minute. I had a young man here working, doing some work for us on a personal level. And he shot me like 15 questions. And so I answered them. And he said, well, I just appreciate the fact that you listened, but you just told me what you thought the truth was. You weren't trying to necessarily be politically correct or be politically incorrect. I'm probably both. I love Jesus. So that's going to come out in everything. And that's not politically correct right now, but he appreciated having someone that he could ask questions to that would tell him the truth.
Yeah. Well, I think that gets back to all of the elements of a winning culture speak to treating people as humans and treating them with dignity and respect, and not only looking at them as something that's going to make your company successful, but looking right at them as your company and helping them be successful means your business can be successful. So.
Yep.
Well, Debbie, I appreciate the time today. It's been a wonderful conversation. And I think there's an awful lot here for those companies that are committed to creating a winning culture, some great ideas, some affirmation of some things that we've covered in previous podcasts. And as always, appreciate you and your mentorship and the impact you're making in our community. So thank you for being with us on Winning Through Culture.
You're welcome. Thanks, Tim.